Okay, civil remedies for a TOMA violation, KP0254. This is about the walking quorum and Open Meetings Act violations. This asked after the repeal of the criminal component in State v. Doyle, the Attorney General was asked, okay, yeah, what about the civil component, the civil penalties? And so this was about the availability of civil penalties under the Open Meetings Act. He talked about some other aspects, right, about the impact of violating the Open Meetings Act. Of course, action taken by a government body in violation of the Act is voidable by any person interested, and they may bring a mandamus action to stop, prevent, or reverse a violation of the Act, right? So I think that's the area where there's the most exposure, and so he said that's very much alive, right? He also goes into the authority of TEA under 39.057. That authority is TEA's authority to conduct investigations, special accreditation investigations into school district violations of the law. This is pretty broad authority. The Attorney General has recently also held that this authority is very broad and underscored that broad authority in an Attorney General opinion. The Attorney General appears to recognize this broad authority and keeps referring back to how broad that authority is and contemplates that, yeah, special accreditation investigation could include allegation of a violation of the Open Meetings Act. And I think that's important, right, that he keeps referring back to that authority and underscoring the ability of TEA to do that. Another thing to point out, in Senate Bill 1640, the 86th legislative session, makes it a crime for a member of government body to knowingly engage in a walking quorum. That recodifies that criminal provision that was struck down in State v. Doyle. Okay, the release of child victim identity, KP-275, whether probable cause affidavits which may identify child victims may be released to the public upon a request made to the Justice of the Peace. This deals with conflicting provisions, not necessarily conflicting provisions, but two separate provisions that offer different guidance about the availability of probable cause affidavits. Probable cause affidavits are public by statute, and there's another provision that also protects the identity of a child victim, the right to use a pseudonym, right? And so the Attorney General went through and offered an analysis of both of these provisions and how they operate or could operate if this issue ever came up. I think it's helpful for our purposes in case we ever run across these orders on either side, and so it's worth mentioning. The specific codes there are 1526 of the Code of Criminal Procedure, which allows the defendant to be aware of the facts against him, and then Article 57.02 of the Code of Criminal Procedure, which protects sexual assault victims by allowing them to use a pseudonym. The Attorney General held that a justice of the peace could come to the conclusion that the child could use a pseudonym in those affidavits, and so that certain parts of those affidavits are not necessarily public information. Again, I think it's relevant if you all have those orders or come across those orders on a daily basis. All right, back to dual office holding, KP-265. The issue is whether the same individual may serve as a city manager and as a police chief in a home rule municipality. This, again, is that incompatibility, and this time we're talking about self-employment, right? In this case, we had the charter where the city manager supervises the police chief. And so that's that self-employment, right? The supervisor is himself. And so that was obviously an issue, and the Attorney General offered an opinion to the same, that violates self-employment. However, the Attorney General noted that the city charter could just be amended to make that not the case, and you avoid that self-employment incompatibility. Just combine the two roles and have them both report to the city commission, and that would resolve that conflict. So some creative problem solving there. Okay, acquiring land through the Parks Program, KP-236. The issue is whether the Texas Southernmost College District may acquire and hold title to land from the General Services Administration through the Federal Lands to Parks Program. Attorney General noted there's no state law prohibiting a Board of Trustees from acquiring property from that program and designating land for public recreational purposes if it serves a public purpose of the district. They did go into some analysis about a public purpose and articulating that if the board could find a public purpose for the use of that property, then this sort of transaction was permissible. Again, if you go into that decision, it offers some helpful analysis about finding a public purpose. As you all know, the Attorney General tends to defer to the local boards for finding that public purpose in those scenarios. Right, county funds to a school district, KP 237. Again, talking about the use of public funds. Whether a county may provide funding to a school district for grounds maintenance, a library, and law enforcement, and funding to a hospital district for purpose of a mental health facility. The Attorney General obviously goes through the analysis of the public funds, and even that three-part test, which is outlined here. Predominant purpose is to accomplish a public purpose, retaining sufficient control, and ensuring the county receives a return benefit. I thought this case was, or this opinion was especially useful now with respect to school districts implementing mental health programs, and in some cases medical facilities. And so if you're all involved in some of that planning, you might want to refer back to